You're listening to Integrating Sacred Wisdom Podcast.
I call upon Raphael, guardian of the East, element of air, come and be welcomed.
I call upon Michael, guardian of the South, element of fire, come and be welcomed.
I call upon Gabriel, guardian of the West, element of water, come and be welcomed.
I call upon Uriel, guardian of the North, element of earth, come and be welcomed. And we are your hosts.
I'm Anna Marstanovich, licensed massage therapist, energy worker, shamanic apprentice, and founder of High Desert Healing and co-founder of Heart Space Retreats.
I'm Matthew David Cummings, esoteric consultant and practitioner with Purify by Fire and Above So Curio.
I'm Emily Kate, an intuitive empath, tarot reader, and energy worker offering sessions virtually and in person in Sedona, Arizona.
And I'm Kelly Houck, psychologist, shamanic practitioner, spiritual channel, energy worker, and founder of Sacred Art Sanctuary Metaphysical Center in West Sedona. Welcome back, everyone, to Integrating Sacred Wisdom Podcast. Today we are going to be talking about deities and also sacred practices.
So deities are also known as immortals, creator beings, gods, goddesses, celestial beings, divine beings, light beings, and supreme beings.
For me, in the beginning of my spiritual journey, and I think for a lot of people, the deities that I started working with, or spirits that I started working with in the beginning, came from my own cultural background. From what I knew, like, I was not necessarily raised religiously, but I come from a Roman Catholic background, so that was familiar to me. The iconography is familiar to me, so I worked with a lot of the saints in the beginning of my journey, and just praying to them or petitioning them for various things, making offerings to them, things like that, in a way that was just kind of intuitive. Like, I didn't learn how to do it, or I didn't read about how to do it. I just kind of intuitively did it. But now that I've branched out, I've been working with deities that are way out of my cultural background, like Norse gods and goddesses. I'm far from Norse in heritage, but that's just where I am currently working with. An Egyptian, too. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people who don't have an Egyptian culture background love working with Egyptian deities because they're very powerful.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I can kind of relate to that. You know, growing up, part of my family was very religious and another part of my family was not. So I had to kind of bridge this love for, like, the energy that I felt from, like, Jesus or the Christ energy, and then also being raised in New Age and metaphysical and trying to marry or bridge earth magic and energy work with, it was kind of a confusing upbringing. But as I continued my studies, it always changed. I always came back to the energy of, like, unconditional love and Christ-like energy, but it almost felt like it was being robbed of itself because there was a lack of the divine feminine energy. So I've recently started working with Mary Magdalene, Mother Mary, but I also work with the Egyptian, like, gods, goddesses, and deities as well now. I haven't before, but as I've grown, they just made it so clear that it's time to work with that energy. Mm-hmm. You know,
do you guys remember learning about gods and goddesses in school, like the Greek pantheon? Right, most people learned about that
vaguely.
You do? Yeah. I remember vaguely. Being like, oh my god, this is so interesting, like, I want to learn all about this is my bread and butter. But, you know, it's like, it was a story.
Yeah.
But now, as I'm getting older and they're kind of coming to me, I'm like, whoa, maybe there actually is something to this. Actually, I know there is something to this. It's right. Not just a story. You know, these energies do exist.
Absolutely.
Where did you go to school?
Globe, Arizona.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Small town.
Yeah. So Globe must have had
also
a little
New York.
Bit more, okay, a little bit, yeah, more progressive, because I didn't learn anything about any old world gods.
Didn't your teacher, like, put on a History Channel documentary VHS show when they didn't want to teach one of those days. I feel like it was one of those things. It wasn't like a specific lesson plan.
It wasn't
plan.
Like a lesson?
No, it was just kind of one of those things. I'm sure it was in the book.
No.
We didn't really go over it.
I wish I had. Yeah. I totally would have been into it. I had to study all those things independently, I feel like, mm-hmm. when I had time at the library or, Borders. Borders Bookstore was a big...
I miss Borders.
A mm-hmm. huge, huge influence of learning different ancient civilizations and time periods and things that I identified with that I didn't know why. I don't know. I don't remember ever learning about even Greek and Roman. I would think that would be something that was, but no, I remember I studied like Homer, but you know, and he wrote the different things, but we didn't study like the things that he wrote about. We just studied about
right.
Homer, you know.
Right,
like,
yeah. We learned about the history too of like ancient Greece and ancient Egypt. I don't remember really learning about the ancient Egyptian deities necessarily,
yeah.
but
yeah.
for some reason I do remember learning about the Greek pantheon, and it really, like, because that is my culture, that is kind of where I'm from, you know, southeastern Europe, Montenegro, which is very close in proximity to Greece, so to me it did feel like I was kind of learning culturally where I'm from, and so it really resonated with me. I don't remember specifically, yeah, if it was just a video or if it was an actual lesson plan, but I remember learning it from a very young age.
Huh.
Being fascinated.
I wish I had. Yeah. I wish that was included in school. I think it should be. I think we're so, you know, kind of, I guess I would say, Christian monopolized, at least in Arizona. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. And my parents also had a lot of, like, mystery books in their library where it talked about, you know, all of the ancient myths of, you know, the big myths of the ancient world. So I would just pore over all of the different types of gods and goddesses and myths of different cultures, and that was really fascinating. I think that's where I got my interest in Egypt, Egyptian deities, and I really wanted to be an Egyptologist when I was a little kid.
So how did that influence your understanding when you were doing the Catholic side of it? Like doing, if you were doing like saints and things, that's kind of like a, I forget what it's called, it's like it's not polytheism, but it's like polysympathetic or something.
Hmm.
Yeah. So it's like a subgenre archetypes that.
I guess to me the idea of saints was easier because I knew back then, I knew for a fact that they had existed, that they were real life.
They were real.
You know, people who had been, was it canonized?
Yeah.
Is that the right word? Into saints, and I knew that people petitioned them for certain things, like Saint Anthony for lost things,
right.
you know. And like I said, my parents didn't raise us religiously, but we did have some of the iconography in our house, and I remember just thinking it was really beautiful and really resonating with it and seeing that it had power. So for some reason, I was able to, I don't know, see the value in using... I guess they're not deities, though. Saints, right? They're not really deities.
Right, but they're treated like deities.
Yeah.
The Catholic Church is really interesting.
Because they kind of lift them up.
Yeah, so they're a monotheist religion with polysympathetic archetypes.
And I know a lot of other Christian religions really don't like that.
No,
there
they don't.
Are saints
no.
in the Catholic religion.
And, well, even other Catholics don't like other Catholics.
Sure.
Yes.
So I don't know when I guess it was later in life when I kind of got to that point where I was like, oh wow, there's all these other deities that I could work with or that want to work with me. I guess Ganesh was an early one that showed up for me for some reason.
Yeah.
I've
worked with Ganesh.
Ganesh
he's
is
so just jolly and happy. And
he helped me when I was working with the Ganesh mantra for a 40-day sadhana or spiritual practice. To quit smoking, and it helped a lot.
So this is a mantra that you repeat?
Yeah, I was doing the Ganesh mantra for 108 times every day,
mm-hmm.
and or any time I had a craving for a cigarette, I would get my mala beads out and I would put it on like YouTube or whatever, and then I would just mantra my way through the craving. And it worked, and I did quit smoking.
Interesting.
Was that a mantra that actually used the name Ganesh in it? Like, was there an evocation there, or was it just considered like the
Ganesh's name is not in it.
Okay.
No, I believe, if I'm remembering it correctly, it's Om Gam Ganapataye Namaha, which I could not tell you what that translation is off the top of my head.
I've heard that.
Yeah, no, it does sound very familiar.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that that had anything to do with Ganesh.
Yeah, it helps to remove or bust through obstacles or things that are holding you back in life. And an addiction would be, feel like, could be that. So I guess working with that energy, that deity, really helped me during that time.
So I just Googled this.
Okay, cool.
So what you just said, Om Gam Om Ganapataye Namaha, is translated to "My salutations to Lord Ganesha." So I think Ganapataye, it means Ganesha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably in Sanskrit.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
So yeah, you are kind of, so that's an evocation, 108 times. So that's, the holy number. Wow. So okay. Interesting.
That's kind of a cool way to do it. Yeah. I kind of had a different background with a lot of it.
Yeah.
And so with school and stuff, obviously I was homeschooled, so I didn't really have much of anything other than like Christian influence, because my family was very formal Christian. So I think when I very first started out, because I think I had mentioned it before, where, you know, I was pretty actually heavily into going to church. My family was actually very formal Lutheran, so we were required to go to church about 3-4 times a week, and everybody in my family was very active in the church, and it just made it to where when I started branching out from it, I was actually kind of scared of a lot of it, so it was hard to switch gears. But since I've considered myself to be like a natural medium, you know, I've always seen spirits since I was little, and usually shared those experiences with my older brother. And so for me, it was like, you know, that was very terrifying, because I remember the church always being like, well, what are you doing to see these spirits? And like, you know, just kind of questioning why I had those abilities. And it's like, well, I don't know. I mean, I remember seeing stuff at like as young as 2 years old. Like, obviously I'm not practicing witchcraft at 2 years old. Like, it just happens. And so it's never really went away. And so
I remember the first time that I met your brother, I think he asked me if I was Christian or not, and of course I was young, so still at the time before I opened up my mind a little bit, so I considered myself Christian. And I think the only other thing that he said to me was like, yeah, if you could help her, you know, with this ghost stuff, you know, like maybe kind of get her back until.
Which is funny, because my brother now is like completely.
Totally. Anti-church. Yeah. I mean, this was a long time ago.
Yeah. I think we met at like 16 or something like that. But so like it was scary for me at the start. So I don't think until like probably a good 10 years into my practice did I start opening myself up to actually working with other deities. So when I very first started my practice, I mostly worked with Christ Consciousness and Archangel Michael. So a lot of my work that I do, so I do a practice called Light Spectrum Shamanism, and most of the stuff that I've done, it was like a combination of different things that I was trained in, like theta healing and different various shamanic practices, but the rest of it was actually channeled in through working with Archangel Michael. And so he taught me a lot of various different things on how to work with energies and work with spirit and work with other beings. And he helped me with a lot of discernment on understanding and trusting what I experience and who I can trust and who maybe I should be a little careful with, and like learning how to guard myself and stuff. So he had taught me a lot of how to trust the process and trust the type of beings that I'm working with.
Mm-hmm.
And with Christ consciousness. I definitely worked a lot with Jesus and stuff like that in the very early times, and still do now every now and then. He'll come in every now and then, especially if someone specifically is like religious and a part of that culture. They tend to have him come through whenever they're in trance. So he's just a big goofball, so it's hard
He really is. I notice with my clients that are dealing with some sort of depression or a lack of joy in their life, like Yahweh, Yeshua, that energy just comes in so strong. And usually when I share that after a session, the tears start rolling and they feel like a part of them has reignited.
Yeah.
You know, so.
He's definitely a spirit to call in for that joy, because he, I mean, if you think about it, it's the one for unconditional love, and with that comes joy. And I remember the first time I had ever experienced him during a trance session with a client. Both her and I were like channeling together, and we both see him like walking around the room doing a chicken dance, and we're like, what is he doing? And we were both just giggling the whole time because it's just silly. It's like, okay, so my first encounter with Jesus, and he's like doing the chicken dance around the room. So it was very fascinating, and I know that probably sounds pretty bonkers for people that don't necessarily work too much with deities where you can actually see them. But yeah, it was definitely an interesting experience. So I would say early on, I definitely focused more on like archangels and focused in more on Christ consciousness. And as it evolved, it turned more into Egyptian gods and goddesses, and then more Norse gods and goddesses. And then eventually just kind of branched out from there. And it's more so just who I'm working with for what reason. And I tend to stick to very specific beings. I tend to not really open it up unless it's necessary.
Yeah, same here. Yeah, I don't think opening up to the Egyptian deities for me was probably my biggest branch out of archangels and Jesus, Mother Mary, and then of course working with like the goddess energy, just the archetypal goddess energy, the divine feminine energy, the divine masculine. But through like my earth magic and pagan practices, I never really called in deities. It was more so the frequency of the energy, if that makes sense.
Until more like the archetypal type. Okay, so that was something that we're probably going to bring up a lot, is a lot of people will think of working with deities in like their archetypal form, which is would not be the actual being itself in some practices. So it would be, you know, like it's not technically an evocation. An evocation would be like calling that actual being's energy, conscious energy into your space. But more so like that's the difference between, I don't know, working with or I don't even know how to say it. It's not worship, you know. Worship is totally something totally different.
Well, what I'm learning and what I'm understanding is, as I'm diving deeper into Heka, which is Egyptian magic and medicine, that it's not about worshiping the quote unquote Egyptian god or goddess. It's actually the let's say like you have a statue on your altar. It's actually a physical representation of the energy that's already encoded inside of us. And it's a physical reminder to embody that part. Like, for example, working with Sekhmet, the lion-headed goddess, her equivalent, I believe, is Kali in Hinduism. And she is the one who assists us in reclaiming our light and our power and conquering anything that stands in our way or makes us dim our light or act small in the world when we're supposed to shine bright. So it's about reigniting or remembering our true essence. So it's not at all a worship of a false god or a deity. It's really about coming back home to who you are and using these gods and goddesses as representation or a compass back home to you. That's the way I understand it.
And I find it interesting because a lot of times you'll definitely encounter this in more Christian cultures where they're like, well, you're worshiping a false god, or you're, you know, working with false gods. And it's like, well, one, I don't think I've ever worshipped a god, so it's like interesting to me that they assume that there's some form of worship. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I'm working with specific deities, I find it more of a partnership and assistance in what I'm doing, as opposed to any form of like worship.
Servitude.
Yeah. And so it's like I'm not doing their bidding or their will. It's more so, if I have something that needs to be done, there's just specific beings that I would work with to help with that. And it's more so like they just assist me in whatever that process is. And so I know, like, a common one, because like there's a friend of mine who has a boyfriend that's very conservative, that is always like questioning, like, well, what if you get possessed, or what if you like accidentally have something follow you home, or, you know, what about protection and all of those things. And it's always interesting to hear that, and they're very valid questions. You should definitely not mm-hmm. dabble in areas you're not familiar with or not ready for, because there can definitely be consequences to that. But
yeah, all those things are valid in their own right, but they're not, I mean, they're totally separate things. Yeah, you should study those and be prepared for them, but they're not, yeah, they're not some, they're more of a rarity than they are the rule, I guess.
I think people who are raised a certain way, maybe very conservative or Christian, like Kelly was saying, they're kind of taught to believe a certain thing about non-Christians or pagans, or, you know, people who don't follow the same sort of belief pattern that they do. But like Kelly was saying, yeah, I don't really worship anything. Like, when I'm petitioning these deities for help, for assistance, I'm doing it with veneration. I'm doing it with respect. I'm doing it with gratitude. I'm not groveling at their feet, kissing their feet. You know, I'm not offering a sacrifice in their name. You know, I'm not slitting a lamb's neck in their honor. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what a lot of people are envisioning that we're doing.
Yeah.
You know, dancing the pale moonlight, naked, sometimes we do. I don't know.
Sounds like a fun party going on.
Yeah, I mean, sacrifices are so like BC.
I think
we're past that.
Well, and not everybody's best.
Yeah, there are
aspects, you know, where that is still very tried and true practice. But
yeah, right. There are cultures that still use that in their practices, and it's no disrespect for the people that do offer that mm-hmm. do those sort of things. But the practices of just working with deities, it's not necessarily something you have to do. And I think there's always like an assumption of what you're doing is like kind of like a one size fits all type of thing, of like everybody's a devil worshiper and you know, everything is Satan, you know. It's interesting. Or they're sacrificing or worshiping a false god or something like that. So it's always interesting to like kind of hear those mindsets. Yet you will find people that will find like Buddhist monks to be like holy people, or like Native Americans, but yet if you hear the word witch, then they're like, oh, they're the devil worshippers.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that's interesting, because a lot of
working
times
with the same people.
Well, a lot of times when I'm teaching like traditional Chinese medicine, and I'm talking about like the five element theories, and I'm discussing a lot of TCM concepts, it's very similar to witchcraft and pagan practices, because it's all based off of tribal religions. And so there's usually a common like verbiage or like common mindset when it comes to tribal religions. But it's just interesting. And I had a lot of people from like the Hopi reservation. They were like, it's interesting to hear you teach traditional Chinese medicine, because it reminds me a lot of our culture.
Yeah.
And so it's always fascinating to hear that, because when I was studying religion for my minor, that was one thing that we were studying, was tribal religions and how they kind of all slightly tie together. And I think that's more of like that universal language of spirituality.
Well, even the deities, I mean, we could say that we're working, you know, with a certain deity. and call it by a certain name, and that name evokes a certain, you know, ideology within the person and their predispositions to it. But even that name has probably changed, you know, 5 or 6 or 10 times over, you know, the since civilization started, throughout every culture and subculture and deity worshiping or ideology throughout the world. So you'll find similarities that are pretty much just like picking and choosing which ones to use in their own practices, from India to Russia to the Norse to you know, the European and African. And they're all, you know, if you really research kind of the structures for each deity, you can find almost the exact same deity in another culture, you know, just represented in a different light. Maybe the name has changed a little bit, but the core archetypes, which is, you know, the energies and the embodiment of what they accomplish, or the energies that you're calling in, are identical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the energy's still the same, yeah. Right? So it's the intention as well, yeah. I think, that matters. So even if the name has changed throughout the centuries, the name still holds power, kind of like a tulpa, right?
Yeah,
like,
but
we've created something out of it, out of just the name, even.
Well, I mean, even if the deity itself is, you know, a single entity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we all have nicknames, right? We change our names, are just a name to be referred to. And over time, you know, as they evolve or as we evolve, that name can change, but that doesn't negate that we're still one entity, you know? So it's hard to think about, you know, invoking a certain deity, but then, and realizing that that deity, based on our dogmatic structure of kind of what we're given in civilization, has changed so many times. You know, it would take a lifetime maybe to even learn what influence that deity has had throughout culture all over the world. Christianity gets a bad rap, or kind of gives a bad rap to a lot of the deities, because even a lot of those are some of the archetypes that were doing good, but not then through Christianity they're portrayed poorly. I feel like it went off in a tangent.
That's okay. I mean, I think it's, you know, just understanding and having the ability to expand our consciousness to find the common threads throughout time. That it's, you know, there's many ways up the mountain. And I think that, you know, there's different types of deities. There's different types of, or spirit guides, or protectors, or, you know, spirit friends for different states of consciousness. And I think that that's the beauty of it, is there's so many different ways to receive the connection with the divine, to have that communion with the divine. Anybody can find it if they're seeking it. And it's beyond religion, you know, it's spirituality. You know, religion is taking somebody else's experience and owning it as yours, whereas spirituality is actually co-creating and connecting with spirit. And I think that's, you know, having multiple types of deities to connect with really nurtures that.
And if you're afraid of, you know, deity, you know, the idea of a deity, or working with another spirit or aspect or something like that, to being unfaithful to, you know, what you would consider the supreme god, supreme architect, you know, source of all things, or mother or father God, or those things. I think they're totally separate. I think we can have relationships with other spirits or other deities like we would any other human. It's not that you're being subservient to them, or you're holding them higher than, you know, the creator. I don't think it's like that at all.
Yeah, I agree, because when I think about like the concept of God, especially coming from like a Christian background, it's mm-hmm. like you would consider it, like, I always just painted that like Zeus like being in my head of like that would be what God is, right? Yeah. And when you go to heaven, you would see this being. But the more that I work with various different spirits and energies and deities and all of that, the more that I kind of understand it more as like just the creator of all that is. It's everything. Mm-hmm. It's the beginning.
It created those deities too, and those entities as well.
Exactly.
Yeah, they're part of it. Yeah.
The good and the bad, the polarities of energies. Mm-hmm. It all came from one source. And when you think about it, it's like I tell people, like, if you think about the concept of the creator is like the ocean, right? And the ocean is just something very large. And if you think about maybe deities as like lakes, well, the lakes are still somehow like water and a part of the same source.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then you can think about it as like angels maybe being pawns, and then you have humans that are like maybe like little pools or something like that. And so,
and the Holy Spirit is rain.
Or like we are the raindrops or something, but it's like we are all still a part of source in the end. And when we are thinking about what God is, I think God is too complex to ever be able to understand with our own human minds.
Yeah.
And on top of that, we are still a part of God.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just like a small raindrop of that ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't ever consider any of those things to be separate. I consider them to be just different energies. Just like, even if you think about negative energies, I think of it more as like maybe a pond that got a little too like out, like mucky and dirty or something. Who knows? I don't know. So it's kind of like when you start thinking about it that way, where everything is all connected and all a part of each other, then there's not really a concept of good and bad anymore. It's mm-hmm. just more so a polarity of energies of, you know, more of a yin and more of a yang, and yeah. that everything needs a polarity in life. Because without it, why would we come to Earth school?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we could just be in heaven and experiencing bliss at all times.
Yeah.
That concept that Christianity talks about, where it's, you know, just being in a loving space where you worship God and it's all full of bliss and happiness and joy. But if life was like that on Earth, then why would we ever come here and incarnate here?
Mm-hmm.
That brings up another point. So the separation or understanding of what deity is, and that people expect, oh, you're worshiping, you know, this deity if you're working with it. Well, worshiping kind of gives the connotation that we're lesser than. And I don't feel that that's the case. We're different, you know, but I wouldn't say we're lesser than. Otherwise, why would the deities even bother working with us? It's
right.
because we can experience a different form of reality than they can. And likewise, so they can experience and give action to a different aspect that we can't access. So it's not that one is lesser or greater than, it's that we're each in our own divine place, our own divine right and experience.
Well, yeah, and you know, if these beings are known as divine and cosmic, well, so is our molecular structure. You know, like, we're literally stardust. So we're like the micro of the macro. We're just a reflection of, or the vehicle in which the divine energy can work through. And I think that's a big part of what you're saying, like in Earth school, is learning to be that that vessel of the divine.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So let me pose a question. So how do you guys know when a deity wants to work with you or when you want to work with a deity?
When it's inescapable. It continues to show up over and over and over.
And how does it show up for you?
Either in the conversations that you're having with people, I even get like things that are coming up on either social media, or like shows that you're drawn to. It just seems to be like a common thread, like, oh, that's the third freaking time I've heard that name today, you know, like, okay, well, maybe there's something more there that you should be looking at, or that you're just, I don't know, you're hyperfixated on it. Yeah. We all hyperfixate a little bit, you know, like that law of attraction is there for a reason. There may be something more that you need to learn from that.
Yeah, I think it just kind of, they tend to just come up. For me, it's like they kind of stalk me a little bit before I'm like, yeah, you know, okay, why not? Others, I'm like, you know, no, this is never going to happen. Like, there's been beings that I, you know, they can present themselves to you and ask you to work with them, but that doesn't necessarily mean you need to choose to work with them. They might be beneficial for it. They might not. And so it just depends on what you want to work with. But a lot of times they will try to work with you. And I know a question that could pop up with that as well is, well, how do you know that they want to work with you as opposed to they want contracts with you? And so how would you guys navigate that?
So I always tell them I don't do contracts.
Yeah.
Just flat out. Because I've literally seen, I've had entities approach with contract in hand, feather pen, like old school, you know.
I'm glad I haven't experienced that.
Yeah, and I still don't know who that was. We didn't speak verbally or telepathically or anything. It was literally just handed to me, and I was like, "Yeah, I don't do contracts." And it was like forced on me again, like here, you know. Like, and I was like,
"Do you know what was on it?"
No, not at all.
No,
I didn't even get to that point. I was just like, "I don't do contracts," and then. Yeah, they exited. So I still don't know who that was, but and I've been contacted, you know, telepathically other times, like with the question, you know, do you want this, or like the, you know, quid pro quo thing, you know, like you do this, I'll do this for you, which fine, we can have agreements, but not contracts, you know.
Yeah, there's a difference between contracts and agreements.
Yeah.
And that was one thing that I always tell people who are getting into this practice that they should be very careful with is anything that I do, any agreements I make in the seventh plane. And for those that aren't familiar with the seventh plane, that is considered like where the source of all creation is. And so it's overriding all planes of existence into the divine consciousness. And when you are making those agreements in there, you're not making contracts. But you can break contracts if there are ones that have ever come up, especially past life ones. But you can always make agreements. And when you do it in the seventh plane, it's different than doing it like here on Earth or in other different planes of existence, because then you're bound by those agreements and you kind of owe them something with it. So you have to be careful with that. Because if you want to do practices where you don't want to be bound by whatever agreement that you had made to where you have to pay back whatever it is that you made an agreement with, you have to do it in the seventh plane so that it is not anything that is something that has to be paid back. This is more of a mutual agreement between two souls as opposed to something that's binding you to someone or something.
And there's still, you know, that karmic kind of universal balance, so you can't just make an agreement or make a contract and then just go to the seventh plane and dissolve it because you don't want to fulfill your end of the deal, you know, like over time. I mean, yeah, you might get away with that a few times, but over time that's going to reflect back on your character. You may not in some way universally. I'm not exactly sure exactly how it works. I'm just saying
maybe it comes up through shadow work.
There's got to be some there's got to be some check and balance there, you know, that's going to be enacted eventually.
It'd be interesting. I'd be interested to see like how that would pan out, because I don't think I ever really got into working with other deities until I started working in the seventh plane of existence. And when I started doing that is when I started working directly with Archangel Michael on, like, is this safe to do? Is this okay? You know, started working more with discernment on opening up into working with other beings. Because I know the very first being was the god Odin, the Allfather, that had come to me. And, wanting to work and do very specific things, a lot of spiritual warriorism. And you know, I was just talking to Michael and I'm like, should I, like, and he's like, it's safe. So I was like, okay. And so that was the first being that I agreed to ever work alongside of and do a lot of that spiritual warrior stuff.
That's the other thing. How do you know that it's safe? Or how do you know the deity that you're working with is the deity you're working with?
Yeah, that's a good question that comes up a lot.
I usually, whenever a client ever asks me about that, because I have a session that I do with people that's called Meet Your Spirit Guides. And one of the things that I have them do is first go to the seventh plane. And while they're in the seventh plane, call on their primary guide that can be a translator. And this would be a guide that you would focus on trusting, kind of like the relationship I had built up with Archangel Michael, where it was like, you know, giving me the information of, is this trustworthy? Is this who they say they are? Yeah. You know, and all of that, especially because you're not always going to be popping up to the seventh plane.
Sure.
And for those that aren't familiar with what I'm talking about doing shamanic journeys up to the seventh plane, and that's kind of more leaving your energy body and going there. And so one of the things that I have them do is talk to a spirit guide that would like to be the translator and the one to work with discernment. And we do it in the seventh plane so that they can practice discernment in a careful way. And that tends to be more effective for them so that they can then have that trusted being. And then I ask them to put like an energy imprint on them so that they can feel their energy whenever it comes out. So that they know that that's the trusted guide coming in and talking to them, so that it's not just any being coming in the room and talking to them, because that's important too. I know when Archangel Michael's present, I can always feel him. Mm-hmm. And I feel him through my heart space, and he has a very specific energy. And it's kind of the same thing of like, you know, you can feel your mom and you can feel the energy of your dad. Like those are so familiar and connected to you that you could just feel it. Like you go into your mom's house, it just has a feeling of your mom.
Yeah.
That's mom, right? And so that energy is imprinted on you because of the fact that it's familiar. You can sense it when it's there, and then you can smell things that remind you of mom, or you can smell or do things that remind you of mom, and it brings back that energy back. And it's the same thing after they pass, where, you know, that smell will still bring that energy of mom back, or like that place will bring that energy back. And so working with beings, when you want to practice discernment and working with that primary guide that can assist you with discernment, would be important on doing that energy imprint so that you can sense that feeling of them again, so that you know, okay, this is them. And this is what they're giving me the information with.
You just, you build that innate knowledge of, just that internal knowing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that takes practice. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think me being like lifelong medium,
sure,
like 37 years, and I just barely got to the point where it's like, okay, I trust my own intuition on what's coming through.
Yeah.
I mean, well, and that's what I was going to add was one of my primary guides is my higher self. It is the part of me that is connected with Creator. You know, you going back to your question, Anna, about how do you know what's the right one? And, you know, it took me a long time to build that trust with my intuition. And once I started to trust my higher self, who is connected with all that is, my compass is peace. If the guide shows up and I don't have peace, it's not the guide.
Mm-hmm.
If I have peace, it doesn't mean I won't be nervous. Maybe, you know, I know I have to work through stuff with that guide. But if there's a deep peace inside of my being, that's enough for me. So, you know, whether it's Okay, and Archangel Michael, of course, is always there, but that main energy, that straight channel from 3D Emily to, you know, multidimensional Emily straight to the all that is, that works for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really good that you brought that up, because I think building up your intuition will help you with discernment, mm-hmm. and be able to discern who you're working with. If you're not a place where you're familiar with the seventh plane or working on the seventh plane yet,
yeah.
or taking it there.
Yeah, and I think working with the seventh plane, like that's an amazing, like where it's at. Like the work that you guys do is incredibly powerful, and it helped me personally work through a lot of stuff. So anybody that's listening, I highly recommend Light Spectrum Shamanism if you want to make some serious breakthroughs in your life and step back into you, into your beingness and what you want to achieve in life. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I have had a lot of not so nice interactions with different deities and spirits. Mostly due to my own curiosity.
Self-inflicted, okay.
Yeah.
So actual deities?
Yeah, I'm not going to go into super specifics.
We don't need a name.
Yeah,
names.
No, I'm not going to go into super specifics because it was, you know, it was part of my growth that I needed to do. And I had to learn my lessons of... but I've always gone into... I've always gone into it saying, you know, I'm just here to observe. I'm here to learn. I'm here to exchange ideas and knowledge. And I would say the majority of the time that works. Not everybody is super happy with that answer, especially if they're being evoked. So... Yeah. yeah, I don't know.
And there's a difference between like working with deities than invoking deities.
True.
There's a very right. big difference.
I should discern that there are different magical practices that are actually they're kind of trending more popular now, and a lot of it, I think a lot of people are familiar with, you know, Salmonic work and maybe even Goetic work. And I want to make clear that both of those things are a kind of a more modern interpretation of certain spirits and deities. And they're written about in kind of a Christian understanding. So they're seen almost in all of their negative aspects. So not to say that you should go out and, you know, dabble because, you know, somebody Christianity said that they're all bad and they're not. But I like to think of each entity or each spirit or anything just like anybody else that is going to have their shadow as well. They're going to have those aspects of themselves that can be not desirable, you know, and those aspects that you don't want to work with. That's why a lot of people work with strictly archetypal constructs rather than evoking certain deities who have their own free will and can, you know, have their own inner demons per se that may come out, and that interaction may not be as favorable.
I would probably like to add to that, if you are trying to get into more like evoking energies and working kind of more in that realm, like you might want to be a little more well-versed in what you're doing as opposed to dabbling, because there are a lot of things that like to fuck with you.
Yeah, yeah. If it's not done right, I mean... I don't bring those up lightly, because It's like baking a cake. If you get something off even just a little bit, you're not going to get what you ask for or what you work towards. And when you're doing any of these evocations, I don't recommend it because, again, they were designed by people with sort of a Christian background. And so in doing so, they treated these entities poorly through their evocations, which, I mean, it kind of involved, almost like energetically or etherically or magically chaining them, caging them, and even inflicting torture on them because they were seen as lesser beings. Naturally, you're going to get, you know, the sting.
It's going to be a little spicy.
Yeah, if you're going to poke the bear, it's going to bite you, you know. So a lot of these things got a lot of bad raps. But then we have to think about over time, you know, all of these things have been done to them continuously. So it can be very dangerous, and not doing the proper steps if you're invoking in that kind of pantheon, you can have very adverse effects, and a lot of it can be permanent. I mean, you have to use your own discernment, of course.
Just don't do it, guys.
Or just don't do it at all.
Just don't.
It's probably a better. I study a lot. I mean, I may have alluded that I evoke things. It's not really what happened. Sometimes, like Kelly can probably back me up a little bit. Sometimes when we're studying certain things, they just show up.
Oh, yeah. You have to be so freaking careful with that, especially as a medium. Like, I can't even be watching TikTok. Like, someone just talks about a certain being and just saying their name in my consciousness. Mm. They're in my room. I've had to, like, heavily ward my house for that because, you know, or there'd be, like, random thought processes where I'm like, I wonder if the Slender Man exists. And then I'm like, oh, my God, I'm an idiot. Because now he's going to show up at my house in the middle of the night.
Well, and, you know, we watch, like, you know, ghost shows and things. Or we used to way back before I had, you know, any real control over anything. And I'm suddenly channeling, you know, mental patients from Pennhurst Asylum, and I'm
you have to be very careful with that, with like the type of spiritualists we are, because we will definitely manifest those into the space. And I can't watch scary movies for that reason, because sometimes if they're a little too accurate with it, it's like, no, I can't. I'll start channeling it in, because even like them representing it, it's calling on it, and so I have to be really super careful with it. And I used to love scary movies
when
I was a kid.
Me too.
It was like, no wonder I like awareness, woke up to Hat Man in my house.
Okay, so actually, even one of my personal experiences was because we watched The Rite, which was an exorcism movie with
Anthony Hopkins. Anthony Hopkins. Yeah. That was a scary one. Yeah,
that one. I had some very.
It took you weeks to really clear your consciousness back to baseline.
I had some severe stuff. And the other one that broke me was The Conjuring 2.
Interesting.
Yeah.
The Conjuring 2?
I watched
2?
Like
2.
5 minutes of it, and I was like, this is dumb. Turn it off.
Okay. I had a hard time with The Witch.
Oh, The Witch?
The Witch.
The Witch.
Okay.
The Witch.
You know...
With Black Phillip.
Yes, Black Phillip. Oh, my God.
I actually liked that one. I didn't really have anything adverse with that. It is intense.
It's intense. Mm-hmm.
It's super intense. Mm-hmm. But it was, I don't know, I think I was calling on, like, past life experiences. So it was kind of like going home a little bit.
I think for me, like, just watching anything, like, overly violent or gory as a physical and energetic and emotional empath, it's too much.
I have a hard time with that too.
Yeah,
I don't find it funny when people get hurt. No, like when it's presented in a humorous way.
I mean, there's some videos like, you know, where they're actually permanently damaged.
Yeah, but there's some funny, like, videos, some but silly I get ones it. Where they fall on their butt or whatever. But it's gotten worse. I feel
it
like
it really has.
Yeah,
I've become very hypersensitive to it. I can't even watch like mafia movies anymore. Or anything.
No way.
I like. Nauseous. I'm like, oh, yep. I can't.
Yeah. Well, even
it's a
when
frequency.
It's
a frequency, yeah. And I can't.
When they bring up certain things, like people who have passed over and they're being, like, you know, how they're being disposed of, like, I start getting people who were that way and they're like, oh, yeah, that happened to me. I'm like, no, let's go away.
The joys of being a medium. Random spirit pops in the room. I died like that.
Yeah. I don't want to hear about it.
But you need help crossing over.
You're
okay, I'll help you with that.
So you don't want to hear about more about it? No.
I'm in Earth school. Leave me alone. I'm learning. I'm studying here.
Yeah. So, yeah, you have to be a little bit careful when it comes to that. If you're dabbling into stuff, you definitely want to make sure that you are in a good place, especially with your shadow. And that's why, you know, a lot of people, especially getting into like early practices of shamanism or early practices of witchcraft or any other practices that they're doing, you have to really do a lot of shadow work first, because one, your shadow is going to interfere with your ability to use discernment, for one, and for two, if you start dabbling in things that could be a little bit more risky, then they can definitely prey on your shadow.
Oh, yeah. I would say that the majority of the things that you are going to do, any magical evocation, can probably become a parasitic relationship, and you will not be the benefactor whatsoever.
Yeah. So you have to just be mindful of that. Then you can go to people that can help you resolve that. And so that's... unfortunately, one of the things that I do. Yeah.
But again, you could have the same sort of negative relationship even with a deity that, you know, is all good, right? It's just, it's like any other relationship that we have in our regular life. We can get these, you know, codependent relationships or these toxic relationships. We can have those on the other side as well.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that, you know, the entity is bad. No, but your relationship and how you're dealing with it, again, like she said, where your shadow's at, those aspects are going to keep coming up unless you address them, no matter who you're working with.
Yeah, even when I get people that I'm, like, training to do any type of spiritual work, I always work with just... using peacock ore, but not just the ore, but it has to be like an, what's the word?
Not imbued. Infused.
Yeah. Worked with Archangel Metatron. Yeah. Like, there's specific energy grids that are placed into it to create a protection around it. And having them wear that while they're doing this work so that they have a certain layer of protection while they're doing it. And also working with Rue and stuff like that. And I know we talked about that in our very first episode.
Yeah.
Tends to be helpful before they get into a practice of doing regular shadow work where they're being mindful of it. Because in the beginning, when you start shadow work, it's like you're usually doing like the real deep, dark, heavy stuff, and you're really purging and clearing stuff. And then eventually it's kind of like, oh, well, I was kind of shitty with that. And then you're like, how do I clear that out? Okay, why am I doing this again? Okay, this is why. Okay, so let's go ahead and clear that out. And it's like something you just kind of quickly do in the seventh plane. And you're like, okay, done and over with. So it helps you a little bit more. And then when new stuff comes up, you get into that real deep, heavy shadow part again. And you go through that. But it's like these weird processes of you have like the heavy, intense times. And then the more you do it, it lightens up. And then a new experience comes and it's like a heavy, intense time again. Yeah. And then it lightens up. And so it's like a unfolding of an onion.
It's like, yeah, it's uncovering the baggage that we didn't know we had.
Yeah, so it's like, here's a new one. Here's a new onion to, you know, peel off the layers. And so it becomes sometimes a quicker process the more you've worked through certain things. And
like
so
muscle memory.
Kind of, yeah. So you're just kind of digging, like what Tool says, like picking scabs again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so
you have to poke around in there.
Yeah, just poke around a little bit. But it becomes a little bit more routine for people who are regularly in a practice of just working on that shadow part, and then knowing that, you know, negative energies can attach to vulnerable areas of your body that still have unhealed parts of them.
Or your aura.
Or your aura, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so just to be mindful of that, and also do a lot of spiritual pruning as well.
Well, and working with guides and deities really assists us in accelerating that healing process.
Or protecting, yeah.
And protecting, yeah, you know.
Exactly, calling in protection, calling in the four corners. Very important practices to do when you are doing spiritual work, and knowing how to safely protect yourself when you're doing stuff.
Yeah, because when you're clearing your, when you're working with the deep shadow stuff that you're talking about, if you're newer at it, if it's just in the beginning, you're probably still in the place of self-doubt and self-judgment. And as you continue to work through it, and, you know, working with the proper protection and guides and facilitators, you shift into the frequency of self-compassion and self-love and understanding, and that makes moving through that shadow more quickly. Yeah. So it's wonderful to do your research to find out, okay, what deity or what guide could help me, you know, with self-love or self-compassion, or what deity can help me with stepping into my power? And it's just nice to kind of have, like, they're your cheerleaders. They're on your team. They've got your back.
Yeah, and it doesn't necessarily have to be like a deity. I know lately, especially after Halloween, I've had a lot of my ancestors coming in. Mm. And so I just did a whole rearranging of my house where I started putting out stuff from my ancestors and kind of honoring that. And they were talking to me about how, like, they're trying to support me on this new journey in my life, and that they want to give me a sense of home, and they want to make me feel supported to put that, you know, their photos up and their items that they used to own up, so that I have that energy and that sense of home coming back. And so it's interesting that, you know, even past loved ones can sometimes gracefully assist you through the shadow and help you through.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love that so much.
That's really sweet. Speaking of ancestors, I know a lot of cultures will venerate their ancestors with offerings. You know, they'll burn incense, or they'll put little offerings of food or coins or anything like that. How do you guys feel about offerings? Is that something that you do?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. We have an ancestor altar up year round. You know, a lot of people just do it during, you know, the pagan new year or Halloween. And we have, you know, pictures and, you know, pieces of jewelry and paintings that they've made, and ashes and all of that. And, you know, a lot of the ashes are pets that have passed, and we like to give them little treats.
Oh,
you know,
that's sweet.
Yeah.
I love that.
So we have a separate ancestor altar, and then we have a personal altar. And with the certain deities that I'm working with at the time or whatever I'm working through, then I will connect with, okay, well, this deity likes honey, or this deity likes roses, or I think that it shows a sense of I'm humble, and I'm here to continue to be teachable and to learn, and I come to you with a sense of gratitude to continue this current of energy. It's, and like, I think it's so important,
reverence
for me.
And
yeah.
respect.
I find some prefer offerings, and some really don't care.
Yeah,
personally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was, we were doing a journey session with Kelly. And when one of the deities even requested a specific type of offering, and like where and when to leave it. And then
I think that was Sir Nuno's.
Yeah, that's right.
He wanted wine and bread. Too. It was Fenrir.
Oh, Fenrir, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
He's a good puppy.
But very specific. I mean, but, you know, not everybody, not all of them ask for anything. Not all of them expect anything. And I mean, if you do your research, I'm sure you could find things that people have done before, but, you know, whether or not they actually want it or need it as totally an individual process.
Or like Emily said, oh, this, you know, God likes honey or whatever. It's nice to know what, you know, sort of characteristics they have or what they're connected to.
Of course. Thank you for the present.
Yeah. Even the gods.
Because I know, like, in the office, Aphrodite tends to be a very common goddess that comes around in the office a lot. And so I usually will put up roses for her. And I'll keep dry roses around the office too for her, but usually around like Valentine's Day when it's representing love, and like various different times of the year, I'll put out roses just specifically for her as an offering, because she brings in a lot of that love frequency in the office. And so I always like to do that. And I mean, the whole office was painted and decorated based off of the energy of hers, because it was the energy that was channeling through at the time that I had gotten the office, because it's more so focusing on like self-love and community and harmonizing.
Yeah. And you can feel it. Like when you walk in there, you guys have done an incredible job. Like you literally walk into this bubble of, oh, I'm safe.
Yeah. I think the first time I almost couldn't speak. Like it was
that was my experience too.
Yeah.
When I first stepped in there, I mean, I helped you open it like many years ago, but then you got it off the ground, Kelly did, and then I left and did my own thing, and then I hadn't seen it for a couple of years, and the first time I came in there like to catch up with you, I felt like, whew, like I couldn't speak. I felt like I was in some sort of vortex, and I couldn't get my bearing right away, and you're like, yeah, that's my wards.
It's just getting rid of your demons.
It's like walking into a sacred space or like a holy place.
Yeah, it's very high vibrational, for sure.
In, you know, an ancient church where people have been worshiping for hundreds of years, you know, you don't want to talk. So you're like, oh, you have to whisper.
Oh, people still talk.
Well, that was my own experience. I mean, I'm probably loud now, but yeah, my initial reaction was like, oh my God, we have to be quiet.
Well, and I'm constantly having to like shift the energies based on like the theme of whatever it is that the energies want to come through at that time. And I find like as I'm shifting the energies, it brings in very specific types of clientele, and it like is different themes. And so I'll usually like go in and I practice a lot of feng shui, but in a different way where it's more like I'm moving the energy in the space and sealing it with how I'm like displaying things, and using that with intention to seal that energy in and hold that energy. And so it's usually like whatever frequency is coming through at that time of like whether it's like a love frequency or maybe a shadow frequency or whatever it might be. It's like whatever that energy is. And when I mean shadow frequency, more so like nurturing it, like a mom holding a baby.
Yeah.
Whatever that energy is, it's like I shift it until I feel that energy in there. And then I finally seal it off with that energy. And then I'll find like there'll be like tons of people for the next few months that have that need, where they're maybe needing that nurturing mom energy while they go through the shadow. And so it's interesting how like the office will start to like shift energies depending on like what's coming through at that time, and it needs to hold that space for it.
I think Emily can speak on that, how certain trends kind of come in waves.
Well, you know, I mean, I do something similar with creating that sacred space. But I stick with my main deities that, you know, archangels and higher self energy. But being a reader for as many years as I have, there's always a theme. Whether it's a daily theme, a weekly theme, a monthly theme. Either it's today is grief day, today is Sagittarius day, today is, you know, a bunch of, you know, nurses wanting to leave the medical field. There's always a theme with it, which I find really interesting. But it also goes to show that we're all so connected without even consciously realizing it, that there's this collective energy that tends to like ebb and flow at the same time and move through different currents. So whether we realize it or not, like, collectively, we're all working through the shit together.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like, yeah, like the ocean reference, yes, that we had earlier. We're all in this divine ocean.
We are the entire ocean in one drop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Rumi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't really see energies with my eyes open too well. I mean, I do a little bit, but mostly with my eyes closed. But I've spent a lot of time just sitting and studying how energy moves. And it's very, very, very fluid-like. And so I kind of picture, like, those themes and those, you know, those trends coming up, kind of moving through the collective, like energy would move. So just kind of the same type of people are all kind of being pushed along by the same current and mm-hmm. finding themselves, you know, in the same place to find healing in that moment.
I'm imagining, like, a mosh pit. Yeah. Like, you know, yeah, like the wall.
Is it like the wall of death pit? Or like or is it more when they're doing the circular stuff?
But more harmonious.
So mine was a little etherical. That's a little more 3D there.
But, I like them both. That's the polarity.
And it's like, so like a mosh pit. Yeah.
Yes. That's exactly what you're talking about. Sure.
Harmony.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, though. Yeah. And things kind of coming in waves. Sometimes it's, you know, people are put in our path either for us or for them or for both. I mean, yeah, if there's no separation, right, it's for both.
Right.
So yeah, that's could be so
same
for
with
deity
same
work
with deities. And, yeah. So I was just about to say, same with deities. So when we asked in the beginning, who are we working with? I'm like, oh gosh, well, there's so many because it really changes so much, mm-hmm. Depending on, I guess, what I need to learn to grow. Like when I first started doing this kind of work, Sekhmet came to me like very aggressively. Yes, and I was a little frightened. Mm-hmm. I was like, holy shit. She's like, hey, step in your power, bitch.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
All right. Okay.
Put your big girl pants on. You don't have a choice.
And she's left me alone since, you know, because I feel like I learned that lesson. So I don't have like one specific deity that I'm really like, I don't want to, like, loyal to, you know, that I worship continuously. There's just different ones that I work with. Yeah. And I am open to other ones coming in, but like Kelly mentioned earlier, there's some I can't bring myself to work with because it's just not really in alignment with
totally
what I want to do.
Yeah.
And you can always say no. Mm-hmm. I mean, just because they're offering it to you doesn't mean that you have to work with every deity that comes to you.
That's an incredibly important point.
Yeah. And so it doesn't necessarily mean that they're needed. And if they can't pick up whatever it is that they're coming to offer you with, like, assistance with, another being will come in that might mm-hmm. be more in alignment. So if, like, for instance, I've had a lot of, like, underworld journey stuff and lower frequency stuff that I've been working on and clearing with. And one of the main beings that came to me to assist was Lilith. Mm. And for some odd reason, it just never resonated with me. It was just not something that I felt like working with. And I know a lot of people do work with her. A lot of my friends do. But I've just never felt drawn to work with her. Mm-hmm. And I've also had Hela come to me as well and offer assistance. Still didn't resonate. And then there was one recently that me and Anna both experienced, an Egyptian god that ended up like kind
was
of...
Was it Anubis?
Oh, that's right. It was Anubis.
Yeah.
That felt a little bit more in alignment that we've been kind of meaning to...
Yeah, I've had Anubis come to me before.
Yeah. And that was the first time for me, so it felt like, okay, maybe that might be
He's
something.
It's very striking and could be considered maybe a little frightening, but I've always gotten neutral vibes from him, if anything.
Yeah, I didn't really feel like he was frightening. Powerful.
He's very big and very dark.
Oh, yeah. Like, very, like...
He's kind of like Metatron, where he's just, like...
Humongous.
Yes, yeah. And very black. Like, yeah. Very, very... Yeah, like it's almost like you can't see into him, you know? It's like all light, just he pulls all light into him. It's really cool.
And so more so it's like just for the journeys to like the underworld and mm-hmm. stuff like that, on safe journeys when you were accessing lower frequencies. And so that's been one that I've been kind of meaning to like kind of tap in to be like, okay, well, what is this about? So,
and there are others in the underworld that we don't mess with, like certain peacock gods.
Yeah. And we just don't mention those names.
So. It's just not our jam, you know. It's yeah, they'll come to us or they'll be put on our path and we just don't resonate with them. And
yeah, and sometimes they'll be approached by those beings and sometimes they'll come off as trying to be genuine, and usually you just ask them, okay, show me your heart.
Yeah.
And
well, I mean, they all have their shadow aspects too. Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
So if they refuse, then you know they're not being genuine. They're just trying to get you to do things.
So earlier I had mentioned working with specific deities for specific intentions. Like Ganesh really helped me conquer my nicotine addiction. And I still work with Sekhmet, but she really helped me harness my power and step back into it fully. So what do you guys think? Like, what are some uses of certain deities? What deities have you used? Anything like that?
Yeah, so I have a specific story about using Ganesh in particular to help me with a situation that I was dealing with a few years back. When I bought my car a few years ago, I bought it new and I was really excited. And the next day they texted me and asked me to send them a photo of the VIN number, which I did. And then the guy who sold me my car called me back right away. And he's like, so we have a problem and looks like we sold you the wrong car. And I'm like, what? And he said that apparently they had sold me a car that was set aside for somebody else, like a friends and family discount sort of situation is kind of what they were making it out to sound like. And that they would have to come take the car back, the new car that I just bought, and give me back my old car that I had just traded in. So he's like, so I'm on my way, you know, I'm about to drive almost 200 miles with your old car to take your new car. And so I get off the phone with him and I'm like paralyzed in fear. I don't know what to do. I'm on the verge of tears. I call my mom and I tell her the situation, and my mom's like, nope, you signed a contract, tell him to fuck off.
Yes.
And so I was like, okay, yeah, fair enough. And so, you know, I call him back and I tell him, you know, like I didn't really tell him to fuck off, but in so many words, I told him on the verge of tears to fuck off that I did sign a contract and that I will not give this car back. And they could do whatever they want. You know, they can figure out on their end how to make it right for that other person that they thought that they had saved this car for.
Which
so anyway,
rightly they should do.
Which they should do. Yeah. Make it right for somebody, for
what
either
weird
person.
Thing to ask.
Such a weird thing to ask. Like, I had never heard of anything like this before. So I'm like calling my brother, calling all my family members, calling telling everyone basically, don't, you know, shop with these people. I won't put them on blast here because I don't want to get sued. But anyway, so it's still not resolved, though. I go home, and they're still calling me, and they're still saying, like, no, we still have the rights to that car. The VIN number doesn't match up. We sold you the wrong one, this and that and whatever. And I'm like, well, I bought it in good faith, expecting that this was the car that you were selling me. How was I to know that you were selling me the wrong car with the wrong VIN number? And anyway, during this whole time, it was such a huge nightmare. It lasted like a whole week. I was like, okay, what can I do? This seems like really bad karma or really bad luck or something. What can I do to diffuse this? So I got my Ganesh statue and I petitioned him to remove all obstacles relating to the situation out of my path. And he definitely took the assignment and he asked for some coins specifically. You know, I could read that through my intuition. And so I placed some coins with him, and literally like within the next day, I did some other things. I had to call the corporate offices and complain, and within the next day, literally, they're like, okay, well, you can keep it. And then I never heard anything about that again. I had to sign like a new contract and everything. It was very tense. It was very weird. And then it was just diffused. It was like the energy out of that whole situation, just, it was like a candle going out and it was done. But it was at the moment that I petitioned Ganesh, and I think he also kind of put it in my mind that you need to take this other step by calling corporate. For some reason, it never really occurred to me that I should call corporate, because, like, you know, you would think you could just deal with them directly. But I feel like he did put that on my path as well, that this was the next step I needed to take to really, you know.
Yeah, so end the situation. Not only assisted you in removing obstacles, but he helped create an extra solution.
Yes.
Or an extra step for the solution.
Yeah, I'm guessing amazing. Corporate called them and reamed them for royally screwing up. Because when I talked to corporate on the phone, they're like, and I told them the situation, I told them what happened, they're like, yeah, that should not have happened.
Yeah.
Like, the woman on the phone was like, holy shit, that should not have happened, in the most professional customer service voice possible.
She didn't say holy shit.
Yeah, I know, if I could tell she wanted to. So yeah, I've used Ganesh in those sort of ways, because Ganesh is the remover of obstacles, right? So he removes obstacles out of your path, and I've used him for other reasons too, where I feel that my energy's been kind of infringed, or like I've been blocked mm-hmm. by either a situation or a person, and I feel like the effects are pretty instant. He doesn't always ask for coins. Sometimes he does. Sometimes he just wants, you know, veneration.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So next time I buy a car, I'm gonna full body paint Ganesh all over myself and walk into that place.
You know, like, what? Sometimes you have
man
to.
With Ganesh painted all over him.
Let's give that guy a good deal, is what they're going to say.
Yes. Clearly.
You get a free car, sir.
Yes, sir.
As long as you get out of here.
You have entered this secret contest
where we make you disappear.
I don't necessarily call on beings for those specific things, but I do a lot of shamanic work with specific beings, and one of them that I was surprised to work with and call on was actually Fenrir. He is a Norse god that is like the son of Loki. He's a giant wolf, and you know, they consider him in a lot of the folklore as like a negative being, but I've experienced a lot of the opposite of it, and usually when I'm working with him, I'm usually calling on him to help clear things, specifically when I'm working with, like, clearing land. So I'll do a lot of, like, land ceremonies and land clearing for people, and I'll help with removing negative things off of land if there's, like, you know, cursed land, or if they happen to have, like, their home buried over, like, a burial ground that maybe didn't have permission to be there. He's a good one to work with that. I've found that it's very effective on clearing, like, skinwalkers and other types of entities that may take a little while to clear out otherwise. And it's always interesting as, like, a seer to see him going about doing his business. It's like watching a puppy play with a ball, but the ball's entities and he's basically eating them. So he's just happy and bouncing around. It's actually absolutely adorable.
So does he have, like, the entities necks in his head?
Yeah. Oh,
or in his mouth,
back and forth,
yeah. Shaking them.
That's exactly how I see it.
He
made,
it's
cute.
Yeah, you know, a big puppy with very pointy, vicious teeth
and red glowing eyes.
Aww, how sweet.
He's so cute. I mean, I worked with him for a long time, and so for me, I'm like, it's just absolutely adorable. But, you know, anyone else that sees it, they're like, what the fuck is this? And specifically when I was in Europe, I ended up having to park at a place that just wasn't the safest place to park my car, but it was kind of like a last minute type of thing, and so it was like, well, I kind of have no other choice but to park it here, so I'm just going to have to just trust it. And I was gone a whole month, and it was parked, like, in a very bad area, and I was like, and I have, like, a very popular car that could be stolen. Yeah. So, you know, it was definitely very concerning, but I had asked Fenrir, like, hey, can you watch my car? And I believe he actually did, and just stuck around. And I mean, I could see him as I was leaving, just standing behind my car. So I think he just stuck around and kept it from going there. So
awesome.
I worked a lot with when my grandparents were passing, and there was a significant time frame in between them. But I find that when I'm around those who are kind of transitioning, like I'm really get kind of stuck in the in-between frequencies there. And so kind of everything is really heightened. And so there wasn't a specific instance where I can remember Azrael, you know, helping me for, you know, a certain task or anything, but that was an instance where I was calling on them regularly, just to kind of help me navigate the extra heightened, like, emotions, but also the, you know, the mediumship abilities that were coming through, since I was kind of in that crossing over frequency a lot. It seemed like there were things like every day that were coming up that I wasn't able to like separate myself from. And so there's not really a full gender there, is more as an angel. But yeah, so I would continually kind of ask for his help to just kind of soothe the, I don't know, the energies and just the communication between the spirits and things that were kind of getting in my face. And you know, I was feeling a little more vulnerable, so like the empathic energies and were overwhelming. So yeah, he would come in a lot just to, I don't know, maybe clear out, I guess, kind of those crossed over spirits. So yeah.
So, and Archangel Azrael is what specifically would you use him for?
Yeah, I mean, he has other aspects, but he's most commonly known as, you know, the Angel of Death. And that sounds like, you know, commanding and kind of dark and ominous, but I don't really see it that way. It's more of like, he's someone who would help others kind of in their transitional period.
Yeah.
And all encompassing in that, you know, that's kind of the realm that he resides in, and that frequency that he resides in. So since I was kind of stuck in that in between all the time, that's who I would call on for. Yeah, and kind of help where I felt overwhelmed.
Yeah, because I was going to say, the only time that I've ever really experienced coming across that being was a lot of times when there was fear involved. So that would make sense why it would be also the being to work with when transitioning, because it can help with a lot of that fear and navigating into the next reality.
The unknown,
reality.
Yeah. I mean, and being just kind of naturally, you know, the mediumship and having a close relation, like I said, kind of puts me in that mode. So then I'm like, I feel like the doors are kind of swung wide open, and I'm really kind of emotionally kind of attracting that energy. And so he was really good at kind of being the doorkeeper for that time period.
Makes sense, yeah. That's very beautiful.
Could you use Azrael for other types of death in your life, like a death of a relationship or a death of a job or a death of a way of being? Like, could you bring him in that way to assist with those kinds of death and rebirth transformations, do you think? I mean, I think Maybe. Like, why would it be limited?
I think maybe not the actual entity, but definitely the archetype.
Okay.
For sure, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's very interesting.
I mean, I literally had to use them for, you know, actual souls, you know. But if you're, in a more abstract ability, I'm sure that energy would definitely be useful.
Well, thank you everyone for listening tonight. I know this went into quite some in-depth information. If you ever have any questions, you can always email us off of our email address that's on our podcast. And thank you for listening.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Peace.
Bye.
All of the information shared on this podcast is for educational purposes only, based on personal experience. It is not intended to diagnose, treat, or cure any form of mental or physical illness. Please consult a medical professional before using any advice given during this podcast. Thank you, and blessed be.